Monster Man, special episode, Creatures from Outside. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and specifically of Patreon backer Luke, who has asked me to expand on the themes of an earlier episode and talk about monsters from the outer dark, those creatures that come from outside the reality that we understand, and how to make them different and memorable and uncanny. If you'd like to be like Luke and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And when you do that, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is about the deities and demigods supplement. We're currently doing a section on Native American mythology, and I feel like I'm learning a lot. Plus, there's some additional bonus content available to backers at all levels. So Luke, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. As we begin, I think we want to start by talking about the previous episode about the Far Realm, that mysterious world beyond the planar cosmology. Now, I don't think that we need to confine ourselves in this episode to creatures that come from capital T, capital F, capital R, the Far Realm. But the Far Realm stands for all of that strange weirdness beyond the lands that we know, right? The outer dark, the deep umbra, the realms of outer space, you know, whatever. Wherever the rules of our reality do not apply. Or maybe even just to creatures whose context, whose background is completely alien to us. So truly alien species. The fundamental problem with representing creatures of these types in a fantasy role-playing game is twofold. And the first is simple. It's the problem of familiarity. So the obvious inspiration for many kind of outside creatures in fantasy games is the fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. And, of course, Lovecraft made a very conscious choice to move away from the traditional monsters of horror fiction, to move away from vampires and werewolves and ghosts. Now, there are early Lovecraft stories that are ghost stories. I mean, there are kind of more traditional gothic stories within the Lovecraft corpus. But when we think of Lovecraft, what Lovecraft is remembered for, it's for these kind of hybrid horror science fiction stories that include these very alien creatures. And he did this presumably because the otherness, the outsideness of the monsters is meant to be horrifying, right? They're being contrasted against humankind's fragile belief in reality, in an understandable, scientifically comprehensible cosmos. And even though in quote-unquote reality, a vampire should do that. Like, if you saw a vampire, that would be terrifying, not just because it might drink your blood, but also because vampires aren't supposed to exist. The reality is that vampires are familiar to us, as are ghosts, as are werewolves, as are, you know, chupacabras. If you saw a chupacabra, your response would be, they are real, and not, what is that? And I think that's a very different reaction. The problem with this is that familiarity is an ongoing process. So 90 plus years later, the creatures of the Cthulhu mythos aren't novel anymore. They're as familiar to us, particularly those of us kind of like in the nerd world, but also to others. You know, I saw a tweet from the National Weather Service the other day that had a reference to Cthulhu in it. Those things have become maybe not as familiar as vampires and werewolves, but familiar enough that they cannot rely just on the shock of the new to make them effective in a game. So when we want to make monsters alien, we need to accept that the nature of the process, that process of familiarization, means ultimately they're going to become a little familiar to the player characters, and we're just going to have to be okay with that fact. But in order to create that initial sense of alienness, we need to look at how the creature, the whatever it is, interacts with mundane things. In the previous episode on the Far Realm, I suggested a couple of possibilities. And those included things like breaking the laws of nature. And I don't mean like floating, which breaks the laws of gravity. I mean like breaking the laws of causality. Getting really wild. You know, having the Far Realm be a place where like time doesn't flow like it does here. It's not necessarily the case that cause precedes effect. All kinds of strange things could happen. And you can take that and apply it to creatures from those outer realities as well as those outer realities themselves. It helps if when you do this, you've got a pretty core set of what is to be expected from other normal creatures, right? Whether that's like orcs who are just kind of, you know, another species of humanoid, they eat and sleep, you know, they have brutal and violent ambitions, but comprehensible ambitions. It's very, very easy to understand why someone wants to like conquer territory and have treasure. Or the undead, who, although they are not, you know, living beings like orcs, they still operate according to a series of rules that are relatively easy to understand, and they play on kind of existing human fears about death and our relationship with death. So contrasting your alien beings with those can help establish them as truly alien. Now, I want to break this down into two or maybe two and a half categories as I talk about different ways to make alien creatures alien. The first category I'm going to talk about is description, so the look and feel of the monster, all that kind of thing. The second category is going to be motivation and action. So what is it that the creature does? What does it want? Why does it do the things that it does? And then finally, mechanics. I'm not really going to talk about that, but it kind of gets a nod, which is why I say two and a half categories. So let's begin by talking about description. How am I going to make my weird monster from outside the prime material plane, this eruption into our reality, this unwelcome visitor, seem like something qualitatively different from like a demon or a devil or a lich? One way to approach that might be to deal with the physical description of the creature. So, for example, violate symmetry. In Friday's episode, we're going to take a look at a creature called the Squealer, and one of the weird things about the Squealer is that it has bilateral symmetry on one part of its body and radial symmetry on another part of its body. If you look at the creatures of, like, the Abyss, I can never remember which one is which, but the chaotic evil one, if you look at the monsters that represent chaos and unreasoning evil, many of them still have more or less conventional bilateral symmetry, right? Demogorgon certainly does. I was going to say Geryon does, but actually Geryon's a devil, not a demon, isn't he? And if you look at, there are some examples where the creature doesn't have any kind of symmetry, but that's usually because it's a formless creature like Dwiblex. So breaking from descriptions of, like, a lot of monsters are just kind of, you know, a human with some freaky features, right? I mean, ultimately, they've got two arms, two legs, and a head, or they're derived from some kind of animal concept, right? So, if, for example, if you consider, like, H.R. Giger's Alien, it's frightening because it draws on things that are familiar to us. It's insect-like, it's machine-like. It has all these other qualities that all evoke things that we recognize, but are not exactly the same as them. That extends even to, like, the Tyranids in Warhammer 40,000, which are obviously alien creatures, but clearly inspired, although not completely, by kind of insect life and insectile structures. So to go for a truly outside thing, maybe you need to go, like, full-bore Hieronymus Bosch nonsense. Just have something that obviously makes no sense. Now, here you run into one small problem, which is that what is frightening and what is funny are often very close together, because both horror and humor are all about the subversion of expectations, right? A joke sets you up to expect one thing and then delivers another, which is the same as a scare, it just depends on what you're delivering. So you have to be a little cautious not to create something that's fully absurd. A certain amount of absurdity is not such a bad idea. A second thing you can do, and this is true of all kind of horror monster design, is keep your creature off stage for a while. So this should build up some sense of anticipation or curiosity about what it actually is. So let the player character see its effects, the people who worship it, let them catch glimpses of it maybe, or find idols of it, or whatever, but maybe keep the actual monster offstage until relatively late in the campaign. That can increase the sense of weird alienness and otherness, especially if you are seeing other antagonists and, like, you see them and they're comprehensible, and then at the back of your mind there's, like, the color out of space or whatever. It's also a good time to take advantage of the descriptive possibilities of the role-playing medium. Since we're dealing with a primarily oral medium, I mean, no, we have miniatures and whatever, but sometimes you can, in fact, describe something that would be very hard to represent visually. The color out of space, where, you know, a color that doesn't exist is being described. That's hard to do in a visual medium. Everyone kind of makes jokes about the color out of space's various film adaptations, where it turns out that the color out of space is, like, you know, purple or whatever. But you can do that in a spoken word medium. I'm doing this at the moment in my post-apocalyptic game, where the player characters, where I had to run a conversation with the player characters, where subsequently someone had telepathically edited one side of the conversation out, and so they were just kind of having these weird conversations with no one, and I kept kind of saying, like, well, no one says this, and, you know, that's something that'd be very hard to do, like, if you were acting it in a play, but it's possible to do in a role-playing game because you can describe something that the player characters can't visualize. Usually that's a failure, but when you're trying to make something jarring, then it can really work. Another way to deal with this is to just not be consistent. So, for example, I talked about the idea of higher dimensional beings interacting with the prime material plane. And what that means is, like, if you imagine a two-dimensional world. I know, Edwin Abbott, I know. But imagine a two-dimensional world is basically like the surface of a pool of water. And so, as I put my three-dimensional hand through the two-dimensional surface, the parts of me that the hypothetical inhabitants of the two-dimensional world see are always changing. Essentially, what my hand is going to look like is five ovals of differing thickness and composition. That's going to be baffling to them, but actually, it's all one creature. It appears to be changing size and shape to them, but that's just because it's interacting with their plane in different ways. So you could have the same creature appear multiple times, but seem to be different each time, and I think that that would be another good way to communicate that monster's alienness. Finally, and this is a bit more of a behavioral thing, one way to make a creature seem alien is to emphasize the extent to which our world is alien to it. So a good example of this, I was listening to the podcast Bela Lugosi's Shed the other day, and they were talking about the film Dark City, the sort of 1998, I think, science fiction, noir, they called it horror, I'm not 100% convinced by that, film by director Alex Proyas. I mean, if you haven't seen it, I really recommend it. It's very good. Watch the director's cut if you can, which omits some annoying voiceover narration at the very beginning. Anyway, the strangers, the baddies in Dark City, are clearly kind of like attempting to imitate human beings, but without fully understanding them. So they've given themselves these human-sounding names, but they've got them all wrong. So, like, among the bad guy characters are Mr. Hand, Mr. Book, Mr. Wall, Mr. Sleep, and Mr. Quick. So there's this sense that, like, they know that people are called Mr. and then a word, and they've just kind of done that. And so I think that having the creatures be, like, slightly off because their understanding of the norms of the prime material plane is bad is a good way to emphasize how alien they are. Now that we're speaking about behavior, I feel like we can talk about motivation. So there are basically three ways of dealing with motivation for these types of monsters. The thing is, if you have an alien creature, you want it to have an alien motivation. But a truly alien motivation might make it difficult to create conflict, and it might lack the emotional weight that really makes fighting a villain fun. So I feel like there are three ways to deal with this. The first is to have the monster have some kind of unconscious motivation. It's not really that, you know, when Baho Tsukamog, the bringer of pestilence, appears in this plane, it's trying to spread pestilence. It's just what it does. It's Baho Tsukamog, the bringer of pestilence. Or, you know, when some Lovecraftian horror comes from its plane, it just begins to have some other negative side effect. It begins to make our plane look a little bit more like its home plane. Again, it's not trying to do that. It just is what it is. So this gives you that kind of, like, it's almost like a natural hazard where the creature isn't really trying to do anything. It just, you know, it's just going to kind of step on you because it steps on you. The second is to give the creature a secondary motivation that just has some harmful side effect. So, for example, the creature wants to get the blue jewel and it's going to smush whoever gets in its way. It's not that it's evil in an evil sense, it's just that it doesn't consider battering you because you're between it and the blue jewel to be a bad thing. This allows you to have, like, a moral aspect to the struggle, to be fighting an amoral opponent, and still not to ascribe to this amoral opponent too much concern about its victims, which is something that, you know, a vampire might have. Like, a vampire might care about who it's hurting in a positive way. That is to say, it might be in favor of hurting it. I mean, Cthulhu's not vindictive. You know, Cthulhu doesn't hate anybody. It just is what it is. And the third is to have a secondary antagonist. And this is your typical, like, hubristic wizard mad scientist type who has brought this extraplanar horror to this realm because he thinks it can, you know, do something with it, and is just sort of, you know, hubristically uncaring about the consequences of his actions. Or could be a genuine wrongen who wants to immanentize the eschaton by bringing Baho Tsukamog, the bringer of pestilence, to the prime material plane. So I feel like those are all pretty good ways to deal with the possible different motivations of an extraplanar entity, and kind of, like, keep the sense of mystery and alienness in its motivation while still having it appear in a way that the characters can not just interact with, but also care about. Depending on how human-like its intelligence is, it could also have some other scheme that's almost kind of relatable. Like, imagine that the Mind Flayers are just getting all these people together because they want to go back to their home planet. They just don't care whose brains they have to steal in order to build their spaceship. Another thing you can do is the old multiple cultiple, which is to say that if these are beings that are truly beyond the scope of human perception, then it makes sense that just like the different Flatlanders would see the hand in different ways at different times, different groups see this creature as being different things, even when it's really all the same. So if you've ever played the Call of Cthulhu campaign Masks of Nyarlathotep, a very mild spoiler is that there are a bunch of different cults, all quite different in their structure and whatever, but all worshipping Nyarlathotep in one of his many masks, hence Masks of Nyarlathotep. And so you sort of get the sense that each of these groups thinks that they have the line on what the deal with their deity really is, but they're actually all quite different from each other. So that'd be something that you could do, is to emphasize the unknowability of the thing. All you have to do is have a bunch of characters who are obviously failing to understand it. Finally, let's talk about mechanics. I said before that one way to make the Far Realm distinctive is to have it break the rules, including the rules of the game. How much you want to do that is going to vary from campaign to campaign. Every DM is going to make the decision by themselves. But I would say that one thing that stands out about really weird monsters, indeed, classic monsters in general, like boss monster types, is that they often have an iconic attack of some kind, like Mind Flayers, when they flay your mind. Or, The suite of different abilities on a beholder is almost like a distinctive ability by itself. Or aboleths with the thing of turning people into water breathers. Rules mastery and rules interaction in a role-playing game ultimately have a tendency to make things knowable. Even a deeply weird concept like, say, the displacer beast can ultimately be put into a box that allows the players to comprehend it because they engage with it in this regular mechanical way. Now, there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. Again, like I said, the ultimate familiarity of the monster is sort of a price we're going to have to pay for the ability of the PCs to interact with it. Something that was completely alien, to whom human concerns were completely irrelevant, would almost not be an interesting antagonist because one could never really advance one's knowledge of it, one could never really have a relationship with it that had emotional weight, and so on and so on. But it is nice to, the first time the PCs encounter something, you know, up to now they've been fighting bugbears and trolls and whatever, and then when they get into a fight with one of these extraplanar weirdos, something really strange happens to them. Even if that difference is only cosmetic, you know, even if the effect is like, oh, you take 8 points of damage, but actually, you know, what happens to your character is, as it looks at you, you know, you realize that, like, these bones of yours have never really existed, or whatever. So you can put mechanical effects on that, and I do feel like it's worthwhile to sort of add that, like, extra category. Now, you can wind up with, like, an escalation in this sense. So if you think about, oh, I don't know, late stage Werewolf the Apocalypse introduced some kind of like extra silver that did extra silver damage to werewolves or something. I don't really know. I wasn't paying very much attention by that point. But there was always this sort of this arms race in terms of, oh no, these things are even more powerful and even weirder than the thing before. I think that that's a problem that's more, that a game line is more vulnerable to than an individual campaign. So if you want to introduce completely wacko types of, you know, out of this world effects that the creature can have on a player character, I think that's fine. I would probably try to limit it to one, because otherwise it's going to gradually start to lose its distinctiveness, and then your players just can be like, ah, this isn't mechanical world building, you're just a sadist. So those, I think, are kind of the 2.5 key ways that you can individualize and make distinctive and make genuinely uncanny creatures which run the risk in a world that is already full of fantasy beings and magic of seeming kind of commonplace and mundane. By using elements in their description and in their like interaction that make it clear that they don't fit in even with the other types of supernatural monsters that occur in the game, giving them motivations that are genuinely unknowable while still allowing them to pursue conflict with the player characters, and maybe giving them a little piece of mechanical distinctiveness that sets them apart from regular monsters. And actually, you know, thinking about this, the episode about the blank men that I did a while back is also kind of relevant here, because the blank men fill that role. In a world that is full of supernatural monsters, they have to make it clear that they are a different kind of monster, and their weird time attack thing gives that impression that there is something more to them than just another monster that is arbitrarily identified as being a particularly sinister and uncanny one. So Luke, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Once again, if you'd like to be like Luke, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or, I mean, you can pledge at whatever level you feel like, but if you want the episode, pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we'll be continuing our journey through the S chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. We're going to be talking about the fearsome Squealer and the substantially less fearsome Squirrel on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.